Chapter 5. High Hopes, the Standards We Live By. I hated the way I turned out, so everything my mother did with me, I tried to do differently with my Jennifer. Mother was possessive, so I encouraged independence. Mother was manipulative. I have been open. Mother was evasive. I have been decisive. Now my work is done. Jennifer is grown. The exact image of my mother. Jules Pfeiffer. Standards are meant to be lived up to. We use our standards to determine the choices we make about every aspect of our lives, to judge and compare the behaviors of ourselves and others, and to determine what we should or should not do. Each family, and often each parent, has their own set of standards and expectations. It is important for parents to hold high standards for their children's behavior and for children to understand what those standards are. Strong, conscious, consistent standards are necessary for children to know what is expected of them. Good standards motivate them to do their best. The standards by which we raise our children provide the model from which their own standards will develop. Most of us begin our parenting journey full of high expectations. We will be the best parents and have the greatest kids. Certainly not like the kids we've watched in the supermarket screaming and having tantrums. Ours will be kind and obedient, smart and generous, and grateful for all we do. We assume that our standards and expectations are correct. But what happens when those expectations are not met and our standards are not lived up to? When our children are neither obedient nor grateful? When they do not show the politeness we expected? When we are embarrassed by them in public? When they torture a younger sibling? What happens when our standards are threatened by our child's behavior or desires? My child's education comes before anything else. What happens if you have a non-academic, sports-focused child? Proper attire must be worn at all times. What happens when your tomboy wants to wear pants to church? There will be no fighting or hitting in this family. What happens when sibling rivalry rears its inevitable head? I expect my children to be polite and considerate of everyone. What happens when your shy child refuses to say hello? I expect respect and attention to any of my requests. What happens when your teenager argues with outdated rules? Your buttons get pushed, that's what happens. If your buttons are being pushed, it's important for you to look at the standards you hold. Your standards may be hard or even impossible to live up to. Standards may be appropriate or inappropriate for a particular child. When parents raise the bar too high, everyone loses. The child lives with the frustration and futility of never being good enough, and the parent feels like a failure because he thinks he has not raised his child properly. For example, my mother may have raised me with a standard that declared, "There's no excuse for a messy house or an unclean child." I may have kept this standard so that when my child is dirty or unkempt and her muddy shoes are on the carpet in the living room, my button gets pushed. I might think or even say, "You are such a slob! You're ruining my house! You are so inconsiderate! You're going to grow up to be a bum." These assumptions will undoubtedly lead to yelling and blaming and to a child who may feel uncomfortable in her own house. Our assumptions are generated by our standards. No parent likes having muddy shoes on the carpet, but a standard that says there is no excuse for it under any circumstances puts pressure on me to enforce unrealistic rules. Whereas a standard that says, "Having children means that my house and children will inevitably be dirty and messy at times," may lead to annoyance with messes, but will probably not push my buttons nor turn me into a fascist about cleanliness. It is critical that parents remain conscious of the standards to which they hold their children, and that those standards be appropriate and flexible enough to accommodate the individual differences of each member of the family. If a parent's standard says, "My children must obey me at all times," he will have a very difficult time with a daughter who is temperamentally strong-willed and persistent. If this father is determined to uphold his standard by punishing his daughter for refusing to wear a dress to church, she will likely resist him and become rude and disobedient, his greatest fear. But if his standard allows for diverse temperaments and personal self-expression among his children, he will have far fewer battles and a much better relationship with his daughter. Who knows? She may surprise him by wearing a dress to church. A mother may be determined when her son is very young that there will be no plastic toys and no guns or weapons of any kind. She may fill the nursery with wooden trains and stuffed animals with strong expectations of raising a socially conscious citizen. So when he begs for a squirt gun, arguing that water can't hurt, and is fascinated with the latest craze, and has tantrums for the action figures that go with it, her buttons are going to get pushed. Whether she's willing to make compromises, adjust her standards, and allow her child the play he demands, "Mom, everyone has them!" or hold firm to her standards, believing that she is right and her agenda is best for him, will determine the general atmosphere and tone of family life. If she determines the standards she will uphold that only suit her own agenda with no consideration for her son's, she will be in for some battles. If she looks at her standards with consciousness and responsibility and is considerate of her child's agenda, she can find a solution that works for both of them. Our standards are formed from a variety of sources. Chosen. My daughter Molly is an introvert. As Mary Sheedy Krasinka points out in Raising Your Spirited Child, she gets her energy from being alone so she can then be with people. I have learned that when Molly has been with a lot of people, she needs time alone before she will be ready to tell me about her experience. "So, what happened in school today?" was never met with success. I adopted a standard specifically for Molly that reminded me to support her time alone. When I forgot and asked her too soon about her day, and she rolled her eyes and said whatever, I didn't take it personally and assume she was rude. My conscious standard allowed room for that behavior. I forgave the behavior and left her alone for a while. Invariably, when I did that, she would come to me later ready to talk in great detail. Transferred. If I were raised with a standard of behavior that said children should be respectful of adults at all times, no matter what, and had transferred that standard to parent Molly, my button would have gotten pushed whenever she rolled her eyes when I asked her how school was. We would be set up for power struggles each time she walked in the door. My assumptions might have been something like, "Why can't she ever be cheerful when she comes home? She's always so rude. Who does she think she is, anyway? She has no respect. What will become of her?" Most likely, if you have not become conscious of the standards you are holding, the ones from your childhood could be running your life. Often, unconscious standards manipulate our children's behavior by putting our own needs first, time after time. "You will obey me because I say so," is a standard that attempts to establish control for a parent who may have been overly controlled as a child. He may think his turn has finally come, and now he gets to be the parent and have all the control. Or an opposite reaction to a restrictive or abusive childhood may leave a parent overly permissive. This parent, who never got her needs met or feelings acknowledged, may not even know what her needs are, so she lives with an unconscious standard that says, "My children's needs always come first. Mine are unimportant." In both of these cases, the needs of parent and child are out of balance. Standards that buoy ourselves but belittle our children, or belittle ourselves while buoying our children, are attempts to fill some deep emptiness in us, but prevent our children from growing in healthy separation. Dr. Alice Miller, the Swiss psychoanalyst, says in her groundbreaking book, The Drama of the Gifted Child, "Children who fulfill their parents' conscious or unconscious wishes are, quote-unquote, good, but if they ever refuse to do so or express wishes of their own that go against those of their parents, they are called egoistic and inconsiderate. It usually does not occur to the parents that they might need and use the child to fulfill their own egoistic wishes." Reactive. "I will never do to my kids what was done to me," is a conscious standard that is in reaction to my upbringing. The problem is, this standard is about me, not necessarily appropriate for my child or my family. Instead of staying clear of the past, the reactive parent becomes a rebel and repeats it by default. Elizabeth Fischel writes in Family Mirrors, What Our Children's Lives Reveal About Ourselves. The rebel typically defines the parent as a negative role model and strives to do with his own children just the opposite of what his parents did with him. But the differentiation turns out to be a false one, and the bold promises bravura. The rebel is as deeply and unconsciously linked to the past as the traditionalist is. Janet, a parent of three children, was treated very critically and punitively by her father. She felt his discipline to be extremely unfair and favoring of her younger sister. She quietly acquiesced throughout her childhood, doing whatever her father asked. Janet swore she would be a different parent. She would never hit or yell at her children. They would get what she never got, unconditional love. She became overly vigilant to protect them from harm and hovered closely to make sure their every need was met. However, when her 9-year-old son decided to ride his bike to his friend's house, breaking a house rule, Janet's fears led her to do exactly what she was determined to avoid. She raged and grounded him for the week with no bike privileges. She heard her son say the words she had never dared say to her father. You are so unfair. I hate you. You won't ever let me do anything I want. Janet couldn't bear the cutting remarks. She reacted with words she had not heard since her father had screamed them at her. Don't you ever talk to me like that, you ungrateful brat. You always get your way. I can and I will tell you what to do. She could not believe what she heard herself saying. Compensating. We sometimes unintentionally ask our children to compensate for what we didn't get or accomplish when we were young. Sometimes our deepest wishes are reflected in our present standards. My son will be a star athlete and go to a Division I college might be the compensating standard for a father who didn't make the team, but for a son who might prefer to dance. My children will always be able to express themselves and be heard is a standard that may compensate for a restrictive or neglectful upbringing. But this standard will likely render a parent helpless when he confronts his daughter about her homework and she expresses herself by yelling, "Can't you just get off my back and leave me alone?" This may not be the type of expression he anticipated. If he reacted to his controlling parents by rebelling and getting into trouble, he may fear that his daughter is on the same path. His standard is threatened and he is conflicted about what to do. He may find himself reacting the way his own father did, or he may withdraw, leaving her entitled to any expression she chooses. Many times parenting partners compensate for one another. When Carly thought that her husband Jamal was reacting too strictly to their daughter, she compensated by being overly permissive. Jamal reminded Carly of her fearsome autocratic father, and she feared their daughter would experience what she had. Jamal explained that when he and his daughter were alone together, he was far less strict, and they got along well, but when the three of them were together, he compensated for his wife's permissiveness. Here is a list of old standards and their adjusted standards. My children must listen to me, do as I say, and respond immediately without disagreement. Can be adjusted to, I expect my children to listen to what I say, knowing that they may not like it and that they have a right to feel however they feel. I expect them to respond, but give them the right to negotiate the timing. It's my job to make the right choices and decisions all the time. Can be adjusted to, I will do my best to make good choices and decisions, knowing that I make mistakes and am not perfect. My child's behavior is a direct reflection of my competency. Can be adjusted to, my child must learn the consequences of his own behavior, and it is his responsibility. I am responsible for my children's feelings, attitudes, intelligence, success in school, and success in life. Can be adjusted to, I am responsible for providing the best opportunities I can for my children. I am not responsible for their feelings, thoughts, and actions. My children should behave only in ways that make others feel good about themselves. Can be adjusted to, my children are responsible for what they say and do, but are not responsible for making others happy. A good parent has absolute control over the children at all times, can be adjusted to. A good parent does not always know what to do and is willing to negotiate to find the right solution for all involved. My child should have patience whenever I have something to do, can be adjusted to. I expect that my child will have his own agenda about what he wants, as I have about what I want. I always know what's best for my child, and he needs to listen and understand, can be adjusted to. Often my child knows what's best for herself, and I need to listen. Joan's standards. Karen's mother, Joan, saw that some of her assumptions were either irrational or unfounded, such as Karen will die if she doesn't eat more. As soon as she became aware of these, she could give them up. But some, like Karen is ungrateful and disobedient, she will get sick, and I'm failing as a parent because I can't make her eat, were still creating problems that kept the old patterns of blame and resentment active at mealtime. After our discussion on expectations, Joan wrote down the standard she had created for herself. It's a mother's job to know how to nourish her children properly. I started out my parenting bound and determined that eating was never going to be an issue. What happened? Why did I end up with such a picky eater? Joan asked with genuine bewilderment. I wonder if you're setting yourself up for an impossible task, I suggested. It seems as though you may have a standard that Karen is purposefully shooting down. When you say, it's my job to know how to nourish her properly, you are also saying, it's my job to feed her the amount I think is best. You're taking on the full responsibility and authority for her eating. That is your standard, and whether you know it or not, you're making sure you uphold that standard rather than looking at what Karen needs. You mean she doesn't need me to make sure she gets fed? Joan asked incredulously. She needs you to make sure she gets served nutritious food. But what she eats and how much goes down is her responsibility, I said. Well, that's just great. She might as well starve then, Joan said sarcastically. Why were you so determined to not have eating be an issue in your family? I asked. Joan then told the class what family mealtimes were like when she was a child. Her mother grew up during the Depression. Food was scarce for her family, so her mother learned to be quite creative with what little they had. Joan's mother, a stay-at-home housewife, was quite the cook. She provided 3 hot sit-down meals a day for Joan, her father, and 2 sisters. Using a compensating standard, she was determined that her family would never have to experience the scarcity she once had. Mealtimes were not always pleasant for Joan. Her father was extremely critical of her and used mealtimes to correct her behavior. Often Joan's appetite was small in anticipation of the conversation she dreaded. If she refused anything or picked at what was on her plate, her mother muttered about Joan's ungrateful attitude. You just don't know how lucky you are. You're spoiled, that's all there is to it, was a familiar refrain at the dinner table, along with her father's remarks about grades and laziness. I just hope you have a child someday who puts you through the same thing. Then you'll know what I'm talking about, he would often say in exasperation. Joan's loss of appetite was not out of ingratitude for her mother's cooking, but out of fear of what her father would choose to criticize that evening. She felt vulnerable and defenseless at the dinner table and was left thinking that nothing she ever did was good enough. Never having examined what she needed and had a right to, Joan passed on her mother's high standards of nurturing her family with food. This was her transferred standard. Joan's setup for failure. Karen perceives you controlling what she eats, and she's resisting that control, I explained. She feels your criticism in the same way you felt your father's. Perhaps that's why she loses her appetite as you did. Oh, how awful, Joan groaned. By controlling and criticizing, you attempt to uphold your standard. To nourish your child properly means to get her to eat what and how much you think is best. You're afraid you're failing as a mother if you do not uphold that standard. Well, right, she said. But if I let go of my standard, doesn't that mean I'm failing to do my job? I don't mean to let go of your standard, but to adjust it, to fit you and your child, to make it appropriate. We need to have successful standards, ones that help our children feel good about themselves. As soon as children fall short of meeting up to them, as you did with your mothers and fathers, they feel like a failure as you did. Our children measure what they do against our standards, even if they think they're unfair, and too often come up short. Yeah, I see what you mean, Joan said thoughtfully. So what do I do about my standard that will help Karen? I'm afraid if I don't keep doing what I'm doing, she won't eat at all. But haven't we established that the problem mostly arises with you? She's fighting something in you, and you are clinging to your standard. And the more you defend an inappropriate standard, the more you set yourself up to fail as well. Why would you want to do that? I asked. But won't I fail if I don't have that standard? Not if you create a new one. Let's think about a standard that will help both you and Karen. Together we came up with, it's my job to provide nourishing food and Karen's job to choose what and how much she eats of it. It was still hard for Joan to see that Karen could be trusted to eat. Joan understood that she was controlling Karen's eating and that Karen was fighting that control, but her fear that Karen would never eat unless she kept after her continued to provoke her reactions at mealtime. Joan was getting there, but something inside her seemed to be resisting. We needed to find out why it was so hard to put her new standard in place and why her intentions were being undermined.